From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Monday, August 14th, 2017. And on this day, educators and advocates are speaking out about proposed changes to Maine's law on proficiency-based diplomas. They say they could keep some students from graduating. And Governor Paul LePage has not spoken about the violence in Charlottesville this weekend. We'll talk about why that might be. Those stories in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
Elected officials from across the country have scrambled to respond publicly to the white nationalist protests that turned violent in Charlottesville, Virginia on Saturday. The response denouncing the protests has been swift and unequivocal in many cases, but so far Maine Governor Paul LePage has remained silent. Our own Steve Missler has just published a web story about how the governor's silence makes him an outlier locally and nationally. Steve, Governor LePage usually is not shy about airing his feelings, but he has not said anything about Charlottesville.
No, he hasn't. I mean, we've asked for a statement and we've received no indication that one is forthcoming. And in this case, his silence really makes him an outlier. We combed through the Twitter, Facebook, and press release feeds of all 50 governors. At least 40 of them have condemned the racism, bigotry, and violence, or the protests themselves. Right next door in New Hampshire, Governor Chris Sununu called the protests absolutely disgusting. And you could go further south to Massachusetts, where the Republican governor there, Charlie Baker, made a similar statement. But so far, LePage is the only New England governor not to weigh in on this issue. And so not only is he an outlier here and nationally, but also locally. I mean, Maine's entire congressional delegation has come out against this gathering and its racially motivated impetus. Republicans and Democrats have come out and denounced these protests, yet we have not heard anything from the governor's office yet.
And what company is LePage in? What can you tell us about the other governors who have not weighed in?
Well, many of them are from southern states, where there's actually a really contentious debate over the removal of Confederate monuments. And if you recall, that's what sparked the Charlottesville protests in the first place. The city was about to remove a statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee, and that's where these protests, they sort of gathered around the statue, and that's where it all sort of generated. But some of the other governors have taken a stance on Confederate monuments, and that includes Alabama Governor Kay Ivey and Mississippi Governor Phil Bryant. Earlier this year, Ivey signed into law sweeping protections for Confederate monuments. And in April, Bryant proclaimed Confederate Heritage Month. Now, other silent governors include those who have aligned themselves closely with President Trump, who has been roundly criticized for his equivocal response to the protests. That includes Kansas Governor Sam Brownback and Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin. And in Bevin's case, he offered condolences to the two Virginia state troopers who died responding to the unrest, but he didn't say anything about Heather Heyer, who was the woman who died when an alleged white supremacist plowed his car into a crowd during the protests. That's in real stark contrast to Chris Christie, the New Jersey Republican governor, who has befriended LePage and was an early Trump supporter. But Christie came out and said right from the get-go that all elected officials should come out and denounce these protests. And that has not happened in some cases.
Well, we'll see what happens. Thank you so much, Steve Missler. That's our political correspondent, Steve Missler, speaking with me from the state capitol in Augusta. Educators and advocates are speaking out about proposed changes to Maine's law on proficiency-based diplomas. At a public hearing on Monday, they said new rules proposed by the State Department of Education may violate federal law and could keep many students with disabilities from graduating. Robbie Feinberg has more.
The new rules involve changes to Maine's law on proficiency-based diplomas. The law says that by 2021, students will need more than just a certain number of credits in high school in order to graduate. Instead, they'll need to be proficient in certain subjects like math and English. But at a public hearing in Augusta on Monday, educators said the new proposed rules could harm students with disabilities.
I think there will be students that currently get a diploma under our system that will not be getting diplomas.
Jill Adams is the executive director of MADSEC, the professional organization that represents the state special education administrators. Adams says currently teams of parents and educators work together to create individualized graduation standards for many students with disabilities. But under the proposed state rules, she says this would no longer be allowed. Under the rules, every student, including those with disabilities, would need to reach rigorous academic standards in order to graduate. And Adams says that high standard would be too high for many students with disabilities.
That's more or less what you're going to be telling that student. Some of those students don't even want to stay through 18, let alone we're going to now push them to 20 and say you might not get a diploma.
These rules may violate federal law as well. Eric Herlin, an attorney with Drum & Woodsum, specializing in special education law, says the Federal Individual with Disabilities Education Act lets local teams determine the best way for a student to transition from school to adulthood. But at the public hearing, Herlin told the department that the proposed rules would run counter to that.
They are going to be denied the one thing that we give kids who go to high school, and that's a diploma. And that's erecting a wall that just doesn't need to be erected.
Carrie Woodcock is the executive director of the Maine Parent Federation, which provides support to parents of children with disabilities. She says that with the amount of work students put in from kindergarten through 12th grade, they should receive a diploma instead of an alternative document like a certificate of completion. Woodcock says she hopes the state will create a pathway for students with disabilities to get their diploma in the future.
These kids are in school for 12 to 14 years, and it can't be an all or nothing model. There's got to be some sort of alternative pathway to achieving some sort of diploma from the school system.
A DOE spokesperson says the department still needs to process the hearing testimony before answering any questions. The state will accept comments on the proposed rules until September 8th. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
Education reporting on Maine Public Radio is supported by a grant from the Nellie Mae Education Foundation. The beaches of southern Maine are bouncing back 10 years after a St. Patrick's Day storm took a bite out of coastal communities and after other storms and a prolonged rise in sea levels in 2010 that caused even more erosion. But as Fred Bever reports in the latest installment of Beyond 350, Confronting Climate Change, the future outline of these same beaches is unlikely to remain the same.
If you spend some time on the beach in Maine this summer, you might see David Cavagnaro stepping along the dune edges, wielding what looks like a long spear topped by a cylinder about the size of a smoke alarm.
So I hit start here. It takes a point.
Cavagnaro is an intern for state marine geologist Peter Slavinsky, who uses GPS and depth measuring systems to map the topography on and just off Western Beach in Scarborough. It's part of an ongoing study of beach erosion and accretion along all of southern Maine's coastline.
And then I'll walk. Normally I'll do. So basically trying to capture the edge of this, the shape of the eroded part. So it's not.
Slavinsky's been mapping Maine's beaches for more than a decade. In 2007, he documented the aftermath of the enormous St. Patrick's Day storm, which caused millions of dollars in property damage. And in 2010, the beaches took a more sustained hit. That year, when sea levels in the Gulf of Maine were unusually high, a series of nor'easters marched up the coast, several right at or near high tide.
So back in 2010, a unique set of conditions resulted in sea levels along the Maine coastline that were anywhere from 5 to 8 inches higher than normal for a period of months. Then you combine the storms on top of it, and you end up with very, very, very erosive events.
The worst in 50 years, according to longtime area residents. And that includes here, where a seaside golf course was threatened and habitat for at-risk species such as least tern and piping plover was wiped out.
I mean, there was basically no dune, and a couple of their greens were getting eaten away, you could say. There was zero habitat in 2010
the picture is different now. There's 100 feet of dry sand between the golfers and the sea, and a portion of the beach has been staked out to keep people and dogs away from nests where tern and plovers have returned in healthy numbers. That's in part thanks to a multi-million dollar beach nourishment project undertaken by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. 2 years ago, sand dredged from the Scarborough River was placed on Western Beach and shaped to approximate the beach's earlier profile. Elsewhere on the coast, natural processes have slowly rebuilt many of the damaged beaches.
In general, considering how erosive 2010 was due to a variety of different factors, the majority of Maine's beaches have recovered pretty well.
Every 2 years, Slavinsky publishes a State of Maine's Beaches report, and the new edition assigns them an overall grade of C, satisfactory. Slavinsky adds that beaches are dynamic systems, with accretion here, erosion there, and subject sometimes to the influence of man-made structures. The 19th century jetty at Camp Ellis, for instance, blocks sand from the Saco River from reaching the nearest beaches.
Ferry Beach and Camp Ellis Beach down in Saco, there are typically a lot of erosion occurs down there. And then on the converse side of that, you know, right across the jetty here over at Pine Point and East Grand Beach are some of our best performing profiles.
And while the overall news is good, it might not last very long. Slavinsky says the Gulf of Maine's average sea level could rise 1 to 6 feet or more in the next century, an effect of climate change that's likely to be accompanied by more frequent and more intense storms.
They're certainly at risk to all of the above. You know, it doesn't take much for conditions to align again for us to have, you know, an erosive event. All it takes is one or two good nor'easters.
There's no question about there being a sea level rise here.
Graham Chase's home is maybe a mile from Western Beach.
I have to deal with it. I put a garden in for my parents up behind the house, and we faced the marsh on the backside here. And it never flooded once when my parents were alive. And now I get 10 inches of water on it just about every time there's a new moon. So this will probably turn into an island or disappear.
Slavinsky says that is a possibility. Shoreline dunes can provide a good first line of defense for houses facing the open sea, he says, and marshes can dissipate floodwaters to some degree. But low-lying roads, houses such as Chase's and other structures, there's a wastewater treatment plant nearby, will continue to be threatened. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that is This Day in Maine for Monday, August 14th. Thanks to Ed Morin and to our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.